you've heard me talking about this for a few weeks anyways, about, you know, and I don't know, I try to take the thought the Lord's laid on my heart, and I want Him to give me something before, you know, the Saturday night prior to Sunday morning. I feel like it should require at least a little more thought than that. And sometimes it don't congeal till then, but sometimes He gives me something that I think about for a long time, and I think sometimes the longer you think about it, the more complicated it gets to lay it all out in order.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's like you always get the 5 Sunday months, it seems. But even 4 Sundays, to lay it all out and divide it up and say, okay, I don't want to step on week 3 by saying this in week 1. It's just so confusing to do. So that you understand the thought that I'm trying to get across here about what we're going to talk about, whatever it is. So, I don't know how this will go, but we'll see. But remember last week when I told you were battleshipping all around what I wanted to talk about? I mean, it was just like there was red pegs all around what I was, and I'm just. But anyway, I'd like to preface this by saying that as a preacher or a teacher or whatever, that, you know, our duty is not just to be the analyzer. Is that a word? The analysis. That's it. And we ain't just supposed to stand up here and analyze what everybody's problem is and point it out.
Sure.
That's not the job. Matter of fact, that's not our job at all. The Holy Spirit's job is the one to point it out to you personally about how the truth that's presented about something applies to you. That's where it's lost most of the time, because most people don't let the Holy Spirit impress on them the truth and how they need to conform to it. They listen to what a man is saying and say, well, I can do what you say. You know, who you think you are, just pointing out all my faults. That preacher's preaching right at me, you know, one of them deals. And I don't know, I've been guilty of it a bunch in my own life, because I've been wrong a lot in my life. And I've been under a lot of preaching in my life and listened to a preacher stand up there and preach the truth. And there's been this disconnect in our generations about your duty to conform to the truth of God. You don't have to conform. That's why they're making truth fluid. That's been the whole big push for so many years, to make it whatever you want it to be, because then that way you don't have to change who you are based on what somebody else says about something. It's rebellion in its purest form. And it's been bred right into the minds and souls of everybody for the last, who knows? I mean, it's been since the beginning, but I mean, you really seen it amplified in the last several generations. Nobody feels like anything has any authority over them in any way, and the only way they'll conform is if you literally take their money and their freedom away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Then they might conform. If you don't stop speeding, we're going to put you in jail. If you don't stop doing that, we're going to take your driver's license away. Okay, you know, then, but it's just still like the little kid that said, I'm sitting down, but in my heart I'm still standing up mentality about it. And this ain't no different. And so what I'm going to talk about goes kind of along what he's been talking about these spirits and how everything is spiritual. And he's laid the groundwork as far as the definition of what that means to all of us for the last several months now, enough to where I feel like I can say this and you understand. So I don't have to lay a bunch of groundwork today. We can just talk about this and you know what you understand where I'm coming from. Okay. But he read that verse a week or two ago about a man who hath no control over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. Well, that tells me right there that, and I tell the kids, and Ken, we've been talking about this, there's things in my life I can control, and there's some that I can't. And, you know, most people spend all their effort and time trying to control what they can't and let the things that they're supposed to control and God's told us to control, they just let them go to the dogs.
Right.
And everything's undone because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's upside down and inside out and backwards.
Yep.
And you're supposed to have control over your spirit. But don't take that the wrong way, because your spirit is controlled by something. A spirit's never just out here running wild like a wild pony. It's controlled by something. Whether it's God. You know, if I'm going to control my spirit and yet I'm supposed to be submitted to God, then what is my duty about controlling my own spirit? It's obedience to God. That's about all I can do to control my spirit. I want Him to control me. I want to be under His control. Because if I'm not under His control, I mean, he that trusteth in his own heart is a fool. Well, if you're trusting in your own heart, don't you reckon you're controlling your own spirit? Well, you think you are. But you're actually being controlled by the wrong side.
Yep.
And that's what he's been talking about all these different things, the spirits, the spirit of this and the spirit of that and the spirit of it. And so if you come to grips with this, the fact that we are a spirit that has a body of flesh. It's just like a car that your spirit drives around in. Mm-hmm. But instead of a body that has a soul. Then you, by definition, I mean by reason of deduction, you have to come to the fact or to come to the truth of the fact that this flesh has no power to control you. You submit. What's the Bible say? You are servant who you submit yourself servant to. And so the spirit that you submit yourself to is who you're going to be servant to. Mm-hmm. And so that all being said, you look around and you see that the spirit that possesses people, I'm not talking about demonic possession, I'm talking about just people's spirit. You know what I'm talking about when I say they got a good spirit. They got a sweet spirit. They got a contentious spirit. They've got a spirit of rebellion. People talk about it all the time, don't even realize they're doing it. But you respond to other people's spirit, and people respond to yours. You'll make your decisions on who you'll even have fellowship with, or have friendship with, or, you know, kindred what? Kindred spirits. Why do they say that? Well, because that's the reality of what you are. Your spirit bears witness with His spirit if you're surrendered to Him. And then you have fellowship one with another because of that spirit that's in you. And so if we could get our minds wrapped around this and then stop trying to straddle the fence about how we view our existence in this world, even as a human being, much less as a Christian, then we're going to have to, if we're submitted to the truth, we're going to have to respond to this in a way that changes things about our life. You know, you ever wondered how come somebody can sit in church for 30 years and listen to good preaching that's sound in doctrine, and yet they literally live their life like a dichotomy, like they're a different person when they walk out the door? It's because it really comes down, I mean, not to sound redundant, but you must apply these things in your life. I mean, if you are surrendered to the truth and the spirit of truth, then you will obey the truth. You'll obey what the Spirit tells you through the truth of God's Word. And I don't know, it's like I told her this morning, I said, you know, my truck sitting out there in the parking lot, if I never went and started it again, it'd sit right there till the wheels fell off of it. Until the end of time, it'd sit there till it was gone. And it would never hurt anybody. But if I go out there and get in it and take off down the road and crash into somebody, I'm the one that was doing that. I'm the one that made that truck crash into that other person and maybe kill them. Your body, your flesh, is the same exact way.
Yep.
And it's being driven by something. And it's being driven by the spirit of something, one or the other. And you look around today, and especially the year that we've had, and not to disparage, I hate people saying, you know, 2020 has been the worst year of our life. You know, you think there ain't been other bad years since the dawn of time? I bet you, if we could hear some stories, there'd been a worse year than 2020.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
However, it's what we're looking at right now. And for some people, it's way worse than others. That we all know that's a fact. But you need to understand that the Bible says in perilous times shall wax worse and worse. There's going to be a ramp up in your sin of the spiritual world becoming more forceful and strong. You know, the when Jesus was in the garden, what did he tell them? This is the hour of darkness. Mm-hmm. This is their time.
This is your hour.
This is your hour. And the power of darkness. He recognized, as a man, that the spirits that were... I mean, what was about to happen was the Son of God was about to die. And the spirits knew it. So that's why there was so much evil going on right then. Because it wasn't that everybody hated Jesus so bad and they all just took the chance while everybody was distracted to go do crazy stuff. No, the spirits were working. And that's what's happening now. That's what's happening now. I mean, we need to recognize that. And I want to talk about how the things, the spirits that we submit ourselves to are the engine that's pushing us down the road of life. It's the things that make us do what we do. It's the thing that motivates us to respond to the information or misinformation we're getting around us a certain way. The spirit that's in you. Now, if I asked every one of us here, we'd all say, yes, I'm a Christian. I have the Spirit of God. That's what a Christian is, right? That you possess the Spirit of God. I mean, He possesses you. But I want to just take a real, like honest look at my life, in your life. We don't need to do this. We must. Are we living our life like the Spirit of God is the one directing us? Now, that sounds cliche because it's just like easy to just say that and then go on about our business, you know, the Spirit of God. Blah, blah, blah. But does it really affect not just how I live my life, like what I won't watch on TV or what I won't partake of, you know, what I won't drink or what I won't, you know, say, or it's way deeper than all of that. You know, it's about who you're putting your trust in. And the spirit that you're following, that's leading you, be it a spirit of... We're going to talk about the spirit of fear. Because that is what is got such a grip and has since the beginning. See, you got to think about this and what a character Satan is. I've been reading Job. And, you know, everybody just kind of bounces across the top of that book and kind of looks at it kind of like what you was talking about Nicodemus. Wednesday night, or the woman, the Samaritan woman, or the woman at the well, you know. And they just kind of make their own assumptions about how that all played out. You know, Job is one of those books too. You know, Job, you know, everybody thinks that book is there so that we can see that even though hard times may come, we can trust the Lord because in the end, He'll give it all back to you. That's usually most people's takeaway on the book of Job. You know, if you can tough it out, then God will make it worth your while. And you can poke the devil in the eye. Ha, ha, ha. That's not why Job was wrote at all. Job had some lessons to learn. Even though God had much confidence in Job, there was things that God taught him through this. It wasn't for just his rotten friends that were there. It was for Job, too. And man, it's... I hadn't read it in a really long time. And it's one of those things that it just kind of... And we'll get to Job maybe next week. But Proverbs chapter 29, verse 25 says, "The fear of man bringeth a snare, but whoso putteth his trust in the Lord shall be safe." So, like what I said at the beginning about laying the groundwork and making it all fit into all these weeks or whatever, I just want to talk about a couple of things here this morning, and hopefully it won't be, you know, too uninformative. But, you know, fear is a funny thing. Some people will pay someone else to scare them, you know, because they get such a rush off of it. You get on a roller coaster and have the bejeebers scared out of you and pay them money to do it. They'll go to a haunted house and have somebody jump out and scare them, boo, 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 and scare them, ah! And so then everybody's laughing or whatever. Skydiving, bull riding, think of all the extreme sports and all these adrenaline junkies that you see, and the fear is what drives them. I remember back in them days of the dumb bull riding phase and hearing them guys talk about, look, you know, let your fear, I literally heard them say, let fear be the gas in your tank. Because if you're scared enough, then it's almost like it gives you some supernatural adrenaline power to get through what you're about to do. Otherwise, you'll think yourself right off of him. Now, I used to say that, you know, you're in your head too much. You're, you know, that thing got in your head. Well, duh. You know, reasoning says, you're going to die if you do this. There's a real good chance. Well, who do you think put that in a person? God did. Same as he did the feeling of hunger and needing to seek out some food. Or it's the fight or flight thing that he put in you that's a self-preserver. And it's in its context, it's just like desire for a man or a woman, or love for your children, like the protectiveness that's in it. Or it's there because God put it there. It's hardwired into you. But you're to keep it in subjection and keep it in its box, or else it will rule you. You know? And fear is also, it's not exempt. It's exactly the same. It's in the same category as all those other emotions. Some people pay people to make them afraid and scare the daylights out of them. And some people pay people to try to help them with what makes them scared. You know, they try to make them not, you know, they'll pay somebody to make them not afraid of the things they're afraid of in their head, or dealing with something that has affected them in their life. They'll pay people big money to try to psychoanalyze them, or they'll take copious amounts of medicine for years to not be afraid. So why does it affect some people that way, where they love it and get this thrill out of it, and then other people can't cope with invisible things? Like they just shut completely down. It just debilitates them to where they can't even function in life. I mean, how many people do you know that are either suffer with it or are on medication for anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, all these different disorders they have now that are, you know, they have panic attacks over, they can't tell you why. They just all of a sudden, their heart goes wild. And it is a thing. I mean, to watch somebody have an anxiety attack where their heart rate goes through the roof and they can't breathe and it's like a mental breakdown of some sort. Why? Well, because whatever it is, and I'm just going to tell y'all this, I've experienced this in some ways, okay? It's almost shameful, I feel, to say it because, you know, who's supposed, you know, what kind of guy is supposed to sit around having panic attacks or anxiety attacks or something? But here's the deal. It isn't just fear. Okay, so there's fear and there's dread. And they're kind of like brothers that just hang out with each other all the time. One can be worse than the other. You know, there are people who I'm not afraid of, but Lord, do I dread any kind of confrontation with them at all. And if I let that spirit of dread and fear lead me around, I literally have, I'm not kidding, like I've had chest pains and things like that where I've just had physical manifestations of this anxiety that I am experiencing because of the thoughts that I'm entertaining in my head about all the things that could go wrong, all the different ways this could go south, all the different scenarios of the confrontation and the things that could get said, blah, 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 blah. And I get in my own head. Why? Well, because I'm surrendering my spirit to be led by something other than the Spirit of God. Perfect love casteth out fear. Love of what? Well, love of God, but don't take it as so cliche of a thing as, oh, if I love God, I won't be afraid. That's not true. It's about how you respond to the things that you're afraid of. You know, what time I am afraid, that's W, by the way, in the alphabet. What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. Why? Well, because you're going to be afraid sometimes. You think Daniel wasn't afraid when they chucked him off in the lion's den? I bet he was. Just he was a man after all, and just a little bit of trepidation being thrown down in there with a bunch of hungry lions. What about David when he run out there to Goliath? I mean, we have this romantic story painted a picture in our mind of this kid running out through there with a sling, you know, completely brave. And he stated what strength he come to Goliath with. But he was still a kid facing a, you know, a giant with a giant spear. So I guarantee you there was a moment or two where he might have caught his breath, but he didn't allow himself to be led by that spirit. He was being led by the Spirit of God. And because of that, why could he surrender his spirit to God to be led by him that way? Well, because two reasons. He loved God, and he knew God loved him. And he knew that it wasn't just some Sunday school kind of, God loves you. No, God had proved it to him. And he had proved it to God. There's a verse in Job where Job told God, "Thou knowest I am not a wicked man." He said that with confidence when he's trying to figure out just why this is happening without charging God foolishly. But he could look at God and say, "You and I both know I'm not a wicked man. So I know you're not doing this to me because I'm wicked." Why could he say that? Well, because he loved God and he knew God loved him. He trusted him. He had confidence in God's character. So he could trust him. So his spirit wasn't surrendered to the spirit of fear and every other thing that the devil will poke in your ear to make you distrust God and be a slave to this spirit of fear and dread and anxiety and panic over everything. It's sad to me when you see someone who truly is, they are enslaved. They're a slave to their fear, and they can't even tell you what they're afraid of. They're just afraid. They're just afraid. And if there's nothing viable to be afraid of, they'll make something up. Or they'll imagine something that there is to be afraid of. And it's sad. But the fact is that their spirit is surrendered to something else. When the devil came to Eve, I mean, here's Eve and Adam, and they lived in the garden, and they walked with God, and God was their friend. There wasn't even sin in the world. But the devil was smart enough to be able to pick out her weakness. And what was it? She really liked that fruit? Well, no, they didn't have any idea. It's like a little child not even knowing what a curse word is, because they don't know anything about that. But he did come to her and said, "Hey, you know, did God really say that?" I mean, he exploited her weakness. It's just the same thing that the devil is doing still today. Same way you see some abusive jerk of a man out here. Does he go pick some strong, independent woman with a really strong support group around her to abuse? No. He picks some girl that come from a home, broken home, that her dad abused her and her mom and all of her siblings and left them all. And he picks somebody who has no self-esteem. And then he exploits her fears. He exploits her weaknesses and controls her out of fear. There's two types of fear that's talked about in the Bible, and it's the fear of man and the fear of God. And that's really what I want to talk to you in these last 10 minutes here, is the difference between the two. And the fear of man. Everybody acts like the fear of man is the fear that that woman is fearing about that man that's so abusive to her. That's not what the fear of man is. The fear of man is the brand of fear that man presents as what fear is. Okay? The problem with that is that most people take that definition of fear and they try to fear God with the same kind of fear. And you have, right off the bat, you've completely, like, misinterpreted God. You misrepresent Him when you tell people they ought to fear God. Well, what does a sinner out here understand about fear? Well, the fear like what I'm talking about, that man and woman, the hypothetical situation there. Or the fear of dying of some invisible sickness. Or the fear of getting cancer. Or the fear of going out here and having a car wreck. I know people that won't drive a car because they're afraid to drive down the road because of what might happen. They're afraid of something that ain't even happened yet. And they're so gripped by it that controls every aspect of their life.
Yeah.
And it don't even exist. But it controls them in a real way.
Yeah.
Well, that's the fear of man. Man's version of fear is what one man can impose upon another man or person. That's the fear of man. And what does the Bible say? The fear of man bringeth a snare. It's something that the more you fight against it, the tighter it holds you. What answer does the world have for someone who is afraid, that is ate up with anxiety and fear? Well, they either psychotherapy or medication or both. And they just dumb you down with drugs to the point where you don't feel no more. And that's the only answer they have. Let's take it another direction. What about, like, for example, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous? I've known people that have been faithful members of it all for years and years. But what do they always say? And everybody almost makes a joke out of it. But, you know, hi, my name's Seth. I'm an alcoholic. It's been 12 years since my last drink. They make you constantly live and regurgitate this fact that you have no power to overcome your illness, as it were. Okay? You can't control this. It controls you. And the only way you can control it is to keep coming to us. And you need us and you need your sponsors. When you feel like drinking, you got to call somebody. Oh, I feel like... We was on a trip one time. We went out to Idaho. And there was a woman there in the group. And she was a sponsor for one of her ex-druggy friends. And while we were there, she called her. And I mean, the woman's having a meltdown. And she feels like using again and all this stuff. And she's trying to talk her through not relapsing. And it was pitiful because she had no answers for her. And really at the end of it, you know what she told her? Look, hon, I'm 1,400 miles away and you've got this. And so in the end, this poor woman who's putting all her faith in the fact of her support group and her friends to keep her from relapsing back on drugs, that's the help that she had. So it was no help. Okay? And what was that woman's biggest fear? Relapsing. She don't want to go back on drugs. Who does when they finally get off of them? But without God, there is no answers. You're still a slave to your fear. Because there's not that perfect love. Love means trust. You can't love somebody and not trust them. Not really. It's a different kind of love. I mean, I love... There's people in this world I love, but... You stay right there. But when you can truly love someone, it's because you trust them and you know their character and you know they're not going to betray you. They're not going to hurt you. And the world can't offer that. The fear of man makes you... It's kind of like going to the doctor. This whole matter of like cancer, you know, I mean, it's the dread of everyone. 1 in 3 people get it. 1 in 3. I mean, that's pretty bad odds for us all, ain't it? Mm-hmm. So it's just like in the back of our minds, we just are just waiting for our chip to come up. How many people do you know that have been cured from it versus the ones who haven't? Well, all of us in here have had someone in our family, maybe more, that's been touched by it, taken by it, okay? And yet, when it happens, we go to the doctor. They don't offer a cure. They just offer something to cope with the symptoms, where you have some good days and then some you don't. It's that way with pretty much every illness you go to the doctor for. They don't offer a cure. They just offer something to mask the symptoms so that you can forget about it for a little while. The world does the same thing with this matter of fear. You know, you can go and pay them to scare you. You can go and pay them to make you not afraid. You can go and you can get help so that you don't think about it. But at the end of the day, you're still faced with your fear. You know, if what they offered cured your fear, then everybody wearing masks out here wouldn't be afraid of getting COVID anymore. Because it would be the cure, right? I mean, if this is what's supposed to keep you better, then there's nothing to be afraid of now. But those people, for the most part, are the ones that are still the most afraid of getting it. That they literally live in a state of anxiety all of 2020. That's why they think it's been such a horrible year. Well, I imagine it has for them. Mm-hmm. They've lived in a complete state of terror and panic and dread and fear because there's no answers. They're being led by spirit of fear because the only fear they know is the fear of man. And really, that's all I really want to say about this morning, other than the fact that, you know, it's just like when you're a little child. And I want you to take this last little bit and just think about it this week, and we'll talk about it some more next week. But I remember being a little kid in that house there behind the bank in Piedmont, and I was scared of the dark. So I remember laying in my bed at night, and you've heard Dad talk about it, he'd come in and be like, "Now listen, I'm gonna leave the door cracked open. There's a light on in the living room. There's nothing to be afraid of. Me and Mom are right across the hall. It's okay." And I'd lay there in my bed and just like tremble and shake because I was so scared, because I could look out that crack in my door. And what was happening is I was falling asleep. But in my mind, there was a wolf. I could see his shadow pass in that light in the door. That was me falling asleep. My eyes was literally, I was going to sleep. And I was so scared. But there wasn't anything to be afraid of. There wasn't anything in there in the nighttime that wasn't there in the daytime. It's kind of like when you go deer hunting and it's still dark when you get to your blind. And you're looking out the blind and there's a deer. And that's a giant rack right there. And that over there looks like a hog. And you're just sitting there like finger on the trigger. And as soon as it gets daylight, it's a stump. And that's a limb. And that's a broken limb. And that's a, you know, I mean, it wasn't what you thought it was at all. And that's how our fears are. When you follow after the spirit of fear, you allow the spirit of fear to just possess you and guide you around in all matters. The fear that the world, the fear of man, the fear that is inspired by the world and their misinformation. See, that's the thing why a child is so scared of unfounded things. It's because of two things: the truth or the information or the misinformation that's being poured into their little mind. You know, the cartoons they watch, the things they hear, the things that you really, I mean, that you expose them to. Or how much they feel like they're in control of their circumstances. Why do you think these little girls running around here have knots on their head? Well, because they fall down. They learn how to walk and they just fall everywhere. But are they afraid of falling? Shoot, no, man. They're running. As soon as they can, you know, put foot in front of the other one, they're running somewhere. And who's afraid for them? We are. Why? Well, because we know the danger, and they do not. Their misinformation is that, hey, I'm golden. I've got it now. Woo, let's go. Run, run, run. And we, because of the truth that we know, can look at them and say, you're not in control. You still can't do this. And in the end, I mean, the struggle is keeping them alive till they realize the danger of falling. I mean, that's it. They're not afraid of what they should be, and they're afraid of what they shouldn't be, because of their perception of what's dangerous and what isn't, the misinformation there in their little minds, and what they feel like they're in control of. And there's a lot of things we feel as, you know, feeble-minded human beings, we feel like we are in control of because we understand it. So we're in control of it. It's not to be feared, because I got a handle on that. And it absolutely, from anybody looking in from the outside, you're possessed. You are controlled by a spirit of fear, because you think you're doing what you're doing because you're in control of it. Just like them little kids running around here crashing into everything. But you're not in control. You know, you're living a life of fear thinking you're in control. It's the fear of man. You know, it is the one thing that is absent concerning the fear of man is the fear of God. The two can't exist together. And so, spirit of fear, it's what's controlling everyone. Whether it's about illnesses, whether it's about politics, whether it's about anything, you know. The doctor, you can't get in at the doctor. You can't get in because the line's so long. And when you go there, I mean, it's been, well, how old's Anna? 19, so it's been 17 years ago probably. we were helping a family member move, and they had a lamp with no lampshade on it, and it was sitting on the floor on because we were moving stuff, and she was two. So she ran up and she stuck her hand right on that light bulb, and it put, I mean, it just the whole palm of her hand blistered. So to the emergency room we went because, I mean, she's screaming her head off, and the palm of her hand is one big bubble, like it's just a huge blister. And we just wanted them to give her something for the pain and try to help her. Into the emergency room we went. There was one other person there when we got there, and they took them right back. We're sitting there. I filled the paperwork out. She's crying, 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 crying. I mean, screaming and crying. And this young lady come in. And she's smiling at us and talking to us. And, oh, yeah, that's great. Oh, that's terrible. I hate that that happened. Poor little thing or whatever. And then people come running out, and they took her back before Anna. And we got there first. I threw a really bad fit over that. But you know why she was there? She thought she might be having an anxiety attack. But she was talking to us like everything was perfectly fine. But they took her back first. Why? Well, because the medicine they were going to sell her for her imaginary anxiety attacks was going to cost a whole lot more than the lidocaine they needed to give Anna for her blister. That's a fact. That's how doctors work.
Yes, it is.
It's about the money they're going to make off of your imaginary disease.
Yep.
And that's exactly right. People who they don't really care about, they'll send them home to die. And the people that are slaves to their fear of imaginary stuff, they get front row seat. Why? Because they're doing the same thing the devil did. They're exploiting your fear.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about it this week, about the thing, you know, what is the engine pushing you down the road? What is it that drives you and motivates you and is the inspiration behind why you do what you do? Every decision you make, it's a spirit. It's like he's been talking about. There's spirit, there's all kinds of them. But the devil has these strong ones for sure. And if we're not careful, we'll be listening to the wrong thing.